Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
In this Joycast, you'll hear a summary of the weekly program. Due to copyright restrictions, the music has been edited out to make this Joycast possible.
For more information about the music played during the show, please visit the blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera.
You're on The Fool and the Opera, the program where we like to say that everyone loves opera, they just don't know it yet. This is Joy 94.9 and I'm your host Dan Vo, The Fool, and thanks very much to Jenny and Kirsten for another amazing episode of Gaze of Our Lives, and as always, there'll be bent notes following up my show, so stick around for that. On today's show, The Ox Jumps Over the Moon, A Tale of Celestial Unrequited Love and Other Lunacies. Tonight, in honour of the Lunar New Year, we're going to be playing mostly Chinese and Vietnamese opera. But of course, because I love Puccini so much, we may slip in some Turandot as well. And we catch up with Tobias Manderson-Galvin and Amy Turton about their show Genesis Recreated, a show described as the bastard child of Kurt Vile and the Goons. The program works best with your participation, so please do comment and send in your feedback to SMS 0427-JOY-949. You can give us a call, 96992949. There's also the email, onair@joy.org.au. Now, as you probably know by now, I like to start the show off with a piece of music that is a little bit more challenging, a little bit more popular in terms of the top 40, sort of a countdown sense of popular, and even sometimes a little bit more offensive. Today, we start with the very handsome actor, singer-songwriter, Wang Li-hung. Now, the next track is one from his chinked out phase, his words, not mine, where he mixes canto pop, hip hop, and Chinese opera all in the one. You're on Joy 94.9, this is The Fool and the Opera. You're on Joy 94.9, this is The Fool and the Opera, and that was Wang Li-hung and the Heroes of Earth from the album of the same name. Now, for that track, Wang invited Chinese-American rapper Jin and Chinese opera singer Li Yan to sing. And a lot of Wang's music from his chinked out phase, as he calls it, is about the synthesis of hip-hop and Kung Chu, which is sort of a 600-year-old art form known as the mother of opera, mother of 100 operas in China. And because of its, because of its influence on other Chinese theatre forms, including Peking opera, the Kung Chu tradition of opera, its emergence ushered in a second golden era of Chinese drama, but almost disappeared during the Cultural Revolution. Now, we're going to return to some more Chinese opera and play even a bit of Vietnamese opera later as well, but for now we're going to play an interview with Tobias Manderson-Galvin and Amy Turton when they drop by in the studio to talk about their new midsummer show called Genesis Recreated, which starts this Tuesday at Trades Hall. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9, and currently I'm in the studio joined by two budding young artists who are starring in a 12-person punk cabaret play, which sort of combines highbrow and lowbrow art all in the same little piece. So we've got Joy's very own Tobias Manderson-Galvin from Ménage à Trois and Amy Turton as well. So thanks for joining me, guys.
Oh, thanks for having us, Dan.
Thank you.
All right, let's start with you, Tobias. Now, you're also a reverend.
Yeah, I was online, clicked a few of the right buttons, and good buttons, and found myself ordained. And that kind of sparked off some interest. I figured now I've got a duty to my people, to the flock. So I've written, I started writing a sermon, and it exploded. Sort of a big bang of writing, which is now 12 people, like
more
I said.
A series of mini bangs.
Yeah, like a cluster bomb. And and so we have a choir of cardboard cutouts. They do a very good job at the hymns that we've written for them. And there is actually singing in the show, however.
Tell me a little bit more about the story.
The story that I found in the book, The Bible, it's a popular book.
Yeah, it's a good read.
Possibly even more popular than The Da Vinci Code. maybe not recently as popular. And so I thought, well, it's ripe for a remake. Had a read through it. Noticed there were some omissions. For example, God's boy crush Steve wasn't in there. So I thought, bang, that's got to go back in the story. It's omissions like that that keeping the text from being relevant. And that was the main purpose, I think, finding a way to make the text relevant and very silly. So the small amount of money the City of Melbourne has given us has gone largely into ridiculous oversized props and costumes, all with the same kind of short comedy impact of perhaps 20 seconds on stage, and then it's over. So hopefully the highbrow art that we've got to accompany that will, and the gags galore will counterbalance that.
Let's talk about that highbrow art that makes an appearance. Now, in one of the press releases I was reading, there was Kurt Weill was mentioned as well, the opera composer.
Yeah, well, originally, because that's what I really wanted to make. I wanted to turn into a Kurt Weill-style opera. And our composer, Matthew Lorenzen, was really excited about that. And then we sat down and didn't write anything like that. And we wrote a song that's kind of like a Nick Cave, a heroin, Tom Waits, drunk at the piano style song with as much innuendo as a Carry On movie. And then hip hop tracks, really sort of urban, musically illiterate songs.
There's a couple of like kind of really amazing, brooding, minimal techno, almost industrial, like dark wave soundtracky moments that underscore a couple of kind of key moments in the show.
For example, when God says, "Let there be light and let there also be black light for cool parties with lasers and a DJ," you couldn't have a line like that without some pumping, thudding beats.
And then we've got my character that delivers all of her lines. And, well, I learnt the lines as text. And then in the last couple of weeks, Matthew brought in this really fairly intense, atonal, Schoenberg-esque Sprechstimme style craziness that I've had to incorporate into my character. And I don't know, I think that's been pretty smooth.
I can't read music, I must say. Like, they show me a sheet and I can see, oh, they're going up now, and then now the dots are going back down. But for her sheet of paper, it looks like he's just grabbed a whole lot of dots and just thrown them haphazardly at the page.
Well, I don't think it is haphazard. It's actually really precise.
But it sounds immaculate.
Well, I have a background in classical training. I studied at the esteemed University of Melbourne's Conservatorium of Music, and then got out of there as quickly as I could and have been focusing on, you know, other styles of performance.
So coming from a background of classical training, do you want to just quickly explain what atonal music is?
Most kind of music from classicism until now is based around a 12-tone scale, rising and falling scale, and it's, you know, it's what we kind of expect to hear, it's what our ears are trained to hear, and it makes us feel comfortable, and, you know, every line ends in a lovely little perfect cadence that makes us feel very comforted, like a warm blanket. And
that's how you get top 10 hits.
Yeah, absolutely. And then composers like Schoenberg came and threw that out the window and said, let's think of a new way to arrange, you know, a kind of scale, and we'll take those 12 notes and we'll kind of, throw them at a page and get this, you know, more randomized thing, and then we'll go through that series and we'll
But how can it be more randomized? Because, I mean, surely there's only X amount of notes that you can play and however many chords that you can play with them, and surely they'd all been done up until that point. How was it revolutionary? Just because they were the wrong notes to play together?
Yeah, I guess so. They weren't organized. They weren't organized in a harmonic framework. They were organized randomly. Mm. So they were kind of plucked out of the air and put them together. And you have to, I guess, with a more kind of organized atonal serialism, you have to use every one of the notes in your tone row before you can repeat the tone row. So it doesn't mean, well, in our show, it means that there's lots of recurring melodies, but...
So tell me about your character. How does the atonal music relate to your character?
I guess, as I was saying, like, in this kind of atonal, this, you know, model, you don't get that kind of, like, comfortable resolution, and my character is quite a tragic character. I play the moon, and the moon is desperately in love with the sun, but, you know, as the kind of way the world works, as it spins on its axis, they're kind of doomed never to meet. So my character never really gets her day in the sun. she never gets her musical or emotional resolution.
Gehst nachts
So how did you stumble upon this whole writing for plays and sample theatre? Is it just something that evolved, or was it something that you've always wanted to do?
Yeah, my sister and I have been writing musicals since we were about... She was 7 and I was 9. We've gone enormous car trips with my parents, and I'm sure absolutely horrified them by writing musicals and also rewriting musicals. We rewrote West Side Story to be about fruit and vegetables, which sounds really tacky and awful and perhaps should be touring schools right now. but we did. We wrote a lot when we were young, and then about a year and a half ago, she and I sat down and wrote our first play together and just combined everything that we loved about the stage and thought, well, we want to see this put on. And the only way to do that is to get everyone we know and see what we can inspire. And so it blossomed from there.
Let's talk a little bit about the process that you went through with Matthew Lorenzen. So he came on board and worked with you to sort of develop this sort of musical. Like, how strongly does the music
play in the overall thing? Well, our director said from the beginning, because I'd said, you know, oh, this will be great, we're going to have a cabaret, it's going to have songs in it, and she said, I am not directing a musical, you've got to be joking. I cannot stand musicals. So the whole way through with Matthew has been working in ways that we can sneak songs and music in without our director realizing that we're actually putting on a musical. Our mass choreographed finale, for example, we had to cut back on the choreography and stop calling it a finale.
Right.
Yes, but that didn't stop it still existing. Just had to tweak little things. And so Matthew's been helping us with that.
Giving us new words for musical.
And working
we'll call it Sprechstimme. Yeah. That sounds better.
Things always sound better in another language.
Yeah, everything sounds better in German.
Well, we'll just conduct the rest of the interview in German. No.
Is music something that is important to sample theatre in terms of combining that highbrow art and lowbrow art? Is this something that is a constant theme across
definitely,
all your shows?
Definitely. And in fact, not just that. Like, I mean, well, we had this big gypsy band, the Barons of Tang, play with us in our last show, The Inferno, based on Dante's epic poetry. And then into this piece, it was the same thing, just wanting to include... You know, not just to go to an independent theatre piece and just have the theatre. I mean, just have actors on stage or something. We didn't really want to make actors theatre, because there certainly is enough of that happening in Melbourne. And I like to be entertained. Perhaps it's just because I get bored too easily that we're creating such, you know, schizophrenic, such theatre with so much going on.
It is theatre for people with short attention spans. It's very, like, multi-layered and things going on everywhere. If you get bored listening to Toby, for example, listening to The Reverend, there's something going
which
on up
I
here
find
with
very
the sun and moon
believe.
And then someone over here. And
we've got, and we've written our own hymns. We've got comic book hymn sheets for people as well.
Right.
So even if they did somehow get bored of the show, they could just sit there and read. That's fine.
I guess it's what Brecht was talking about when he was talking about total theatre. It's like total entertainment.
So as a classically trained artist, Amy,
yes.
Does this sort of stuff, is this sort of stuff that you prefer doing now? Like, would
absolutely.
You ever go back?
Yeah. I guess, I mean, as a child performer, I started in, you know, children's choruses in musicals. That was my start in life. But yeah, I really am interested in working in theatre that combines music and theatre in interesting ways. And Melbourne's got a really actually amazing history of new musical theatre, and I'm really into that kind of work thing. And as I said, I worked on this musical with Sisters Grimm recently, which was just all about, like, pulling apart the musical and, like, sticking it back together in the most hideous, trashy, ugly way you could imagine.
It sounds like you're creating something that's quite a new genre. You know, it's a mix of everything. Is this sort of stuff that you think would one day pick up a bit of momentum and...
Yeah, look, as long as people keep making good stuff for me to rip off / pastiche, sure. Yeah, it can only continue to get bigger and better. And I don't really come to theatre with any particular given understanding of how it should appear or for what audience other than myself and my peers. And even if it pisses them off, that doesn't really bother me either.
So is this something you're trying to achieve with this particular play? Like, what would you like people to walk away?
They should be uplifted and energized. It's a really lovely piece. The last show we made was dark and horrible, and people came up to me months afterwards and said, "You really offended me with this scene, and how dare you do this?" And for this play, we've gone quite the opposite, with the possible exception of the finale. Yeah. So most of the play, though, I mean, you should leave really feeling uplifted, and it's a nice show.
Yeah, right. It's nice for a change to be able to say, "Come to my show." You go away feeling good for a change.
Yeah. Like, don't worry. You can bring your grandma to this one.
As long as she's got a pretty healthy sense of humour.
Great. So when am I bringing grandma to the show?
Tuesday to Saturday of this coming week.
The 27th to the 31st at 8 p.m. at Trades Hall.
Yeah, though you'll probably bring her to the 3 p.m.
Yes,
on the Saturday.
Okay, excellent. Well, look, it sounds like a great show, so I look forward to seeing it, and hope everyone else will as well.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks very much to Tobias Madison Galvin and Amy Turton for talking with us about Genesis Recurated. You can check it out when it opens this Tuesday at Trades Hall. Check out the details online at joy.org.au/theformerlyopera. Just after the show, I'll post up the details for you. Now, today is the last day of the Year of the Rat, with tomorrow being the first day of the Year of the Ox. Which, to mark the occasion, I thought we'd play some Chinese and Vietnamese opera songs today. Now, of course, the origins of Chinese opera go right all the way back to the 3rd century, and there is no way I'm going to even try to attempt to summarise the history of Eastern opera today, but there is something that I want to take up in future episodes, and if you do want to hear it, let me know if you are interested in finding out more about Eastern opera from Eastern quarters, because, if you're interested, I'll definitely do it. So SMS 0427 JOY949, email onair@joy.org.au, and give Brendan a call on 96792949, and just let me know if you want to hear more in future weeks about this sort of opera. Now, I'm going to ease you into this sort of foreign and strange music by starting with a Western opera, which borrows heavily on the Eastern music tradition, which is the pentatonic scale. It's the sort of the black keys on the piano. Just run your hand along the black keys. That is Eastern music. Now, Non Piangere Lu is one of my favourite arias. One of the reasons it is because it's not so well known, and it's kind of like my little secret. And like all great secrets, of course, it needs to be shared. So I'm going to share it with you, and you alone, of course. Now, I love the way that this aria builds up, and just the musical layers are just added. There's just so much depth in it. The quick summary of the story of Turinot. Turinot is a very beautiful princess and single. Add the fact that she's the heir apparent to the throne of China, and as you can imagine, every man from the Middle Kingdom and beyond is dying to marry her, literally. Turinot has devised a tricky plan. A man of royal blood may wed her if he answers correctly her riddles three. Those who fail are publicly executed. Many have tried, and so far all have failed, clearly, or there would be no opera. Prince Karl wants to take up the challenge, and in this hour he declares his love. His father, the exiled Prince Timur, and loyal servant Liu try to dissuade him. So do a trio of mandarins from the court. So the aria starts off quite slow and sweet, as Caliph reassures Liu and his father that all will be fine, he will succeed. But the ominous tones start to invade as Liu and Timur and the mandarins point out that it's folly, it's a death sentence, and that life is too beautiful to cast away. Excuse me. Now, the music sort of just builds and builds to the point where the music is just almost a bit too loud, aided, of course, by an offstage crowd. Yet, Karloff breaks loose of all this, and with three exquisitely passionate cries, he cries out, "Turandot, Turandot, Turandot," and strikes the gong three times, which indicates that that is his declaration to take on the challenge. And the music instantly erupts with the royal theme of Turandot and the emperor, dripping with musical regalness, splendor, and the Chinese pentatonic flavor. And the grand theme sort of plays out, and as you listen very carefully, you'll hear some evil laughter from the mandarins and a snare drum hinting at the impending doom that will befall Karloff. Or will it? As we ponder that question, of course, the curtain comes down and we're left with a cliffhanger. I hope you enjoy this aria. I love it, so do enjoy.
The Fool and the Opera.
The Fool in the Opera,
stealing opera from the rich and giving it back to the people.
You're on Joy 94.9, and no, you're not on 3ZZZ. It's Joy 94.9. It's The Fool and the Opera, and that was Yu Shuzhen with the from the album, Ultimate Album of the Most Famous Chinese Stars. Quite a happy and exciting song there. And why is she so happy, you may ask? Well, it's because she's going to an opera. That's the name of the song. Before that, we had Puccini Turandot, Non Piangere Liu, with Pavarotti, Cabale, and Sutherland, which is a beautiful aria there, which I really do enjoy. Now, we are, of course, playing a lot of music from Chinese opera and Vietnamese opera because it is the Lunar New Year tomorrow. It will be the Year of the Ox. And, well, if you visited Chinatown or Victoria Street lately, you would have noticed an excess of red and gold decorations. Now, the Chinese like to think it's theirs, but, you know, in Vietnam, we celebrate it too. Tet Nguyen Dang is what we call it, and it is the Vietnamese New Year and the first day of our spring festival, Hoi Xuân. It usually takes up about 3 days, and when my sister and I were in Vietnam 2 years ago, when we were there for Tet, we saw that the whole city of Saigon just goes to sleep. The streets are empty because everyone is at home involved in family rituals. Tet is very much an extended family occasion. There's praying, ancestral worshipping, there's wishing everybody a happy new year, Chúc Mừng Năm Mới, is a very important thing. And for the kiddies, the other important thing is they also get little lucky money packets, sort of red packets of cash, which the children get from older people. And, of course, there is a lot of eating. Banh Chung and Banh Tat are some of the sort of things that you get. And they're sticky rice treats wrapped in banana leaves, usually filled with meat or different beans. And there's also pickled vegetables and other offerings in an arrangement. There's fruit custard apple, which and coconut, papaya and mango, which is placed upon the altar in that particular order. Custard apple, because it's called Mangao, is placed first. Coconut is Yua second. Papaya Dodo comes next. And then Mango Soy is last. And it's put in that particular order because, well, we like to play with words. And when you place the fruit in that order, it makes the sentence Gao Yua Do Sai, which means we pray for enough money to spend throughout the year. Which is quite funny, isn't it? Now, the other things like firecrackers, dragon and lion dancing, and music, it makes a very happy celebration, and it helps you forget the troubles of the past and hope for a better year coming. As I said, that is a very important occasion for the family. And there's a lot of reunions, and it often means a pilgrimage back to the parents' or the grandparents' home. Now, the sad reality is when a lot of Vietnamese families gather in the West, between the parents and the grandparents, there'll be whispers among them of Tet Nam Sam Tam Mau Tang, which is Tet 1968 in the Year of the Monkey. Now, during that year, during the Vietnam War, even though both North and South Vietnamese had agreed upon a two-day ceasefire, in the early hours of the most important day in the Vietnamese calendar, across the whole breadth of Central and South Vietnam, in a staggering offensive, more than 80,000 communist troops descended upon and simultaneously attacked more than 100 South Republican cities and towns, including provincial capitals, the stronghold of Khe San, the ancient capital of Hue, and the southern capital of Saigon. Almost every Vietnamese family has at least one relative who was killed or went missing during this fateful year. And for the older members of the family, that happiness and joy that Tet brings is mixed with sad and tragic memories. They forget the troubles of the past, but they always remember the loved ones that they lost. And you can see it in their faces when they're praying at the altar. Now, I'm going to play you a song sang in the Vietnamese folk opera tradition Gai Luong and Yong Go. This song is called Xuân Tha Hương, and it encapsulates this very Vietnamese melancholy sense of longing and remembrance. Spring far from home is what the song is translates to, and it's a solemn piece, a lament sung by Tan Duc, and it's about a man who is far from home at Tet and remembers the home that he loved yet had to leave, yet yearns to return to. He recalls the taste of sweet rice, the pungent smell of his favourite fruits, the touch of new grass under his feet, and listening to the ancient secrets whispered in the wind. Above all, he waits for the day when he can be reunited with his family and friends he left behind. It was a song for soldiers fighting far from home, and then a song for refugees. But it's a song that everyone can understand and relate to as well. I recently watched a very inspirational speech by classical musician Ben Zander, and I'm going to make the same request that he made in his talk, which he says will help unlock the messages in music for you. And the request is that when you listen to this song, would you just think of somebody who you adore who's no longer there? A beloved grandmother, a lover, somebody in your life who you love with all your heart, but that person is no longer with you. Bring that person into your mind, and at the same time, follow the song from start to end, and you'll understand every word, every lyric. You'll understand the depth of this song from the very heart of your soul. You're on The Fool and the Opera on Joy 94.9. You're on Joy 94.9. This is The Fool and the Opera. And today we're playing music from Eastern operas. And that was Sung Ta Hung, sung by Tan Duoc in the Vietnamese Gai Lung tradition, a form of modern folk opera in Vietnam. It blends southern Vietnamese folk songs and classical music and classical theatre forms based on Chinese opera as well as spoken word. Now, usually there are anywhere between 1 and 18 musicians playing with a solo vocalist. Now, there are mostly, as you would have heard just then, bowed quarterphone instruments, which range from single-stringed instruments, which the string is stretched at different intervals to make the different sounds. Sort of like if you imagine the way that a musician who plays the saw is something that we're not so unfamiliar with. That's how the instrument is played. They bend it's a gored instrument, and they bend the top of the instrument to make the string stretch in different intervals to make different sounds. And there's also a woodblock called the song lang, which is struck at particular intervals to punctuate the phrases and to particular phrases that the vocalist sings. Now, in Barack Obama's inauguration speech, he talked about the fighters at Khe Sanh and the risk-takers who packed up their few worldly possessions and travelled across oceans in search of a new life. In the last song, while the lament is about home, it's really about the psychology of home, not the physical space. It's about the laughter, love and song that you're surrounded by, and the things that can only exist and flourish in peaceful times and in peaceful places. As the Vietnam War progressed in the 1960s, in the Western world, it led to a new counterculture that challenged traditional notions of authority, class structure, and above all, demanded equality for rights of all, regardless of gender, sexuality, and race. And I hope that that is what is in store for us in this coming year. So, at the dawning of the Year of the Ox, I wish you happiness, plenty, and long life in a world where we can all enjoy peace, harmony, and equality for all. And in the absence of such a place, I hope that we'll all work towards it. After all, the Year of the Ox is all about hard work. Now, for today's jazz piece, it is a suitable one because it shows the great harmony that can be achieved between different cultures. It is called Postcards from Footscray and features Australian Peter Knight, Vietnamese Yung Nguyen, including using Vietnamese instruments, and Sri Lankan-born West African percussionist Ray Pereira in a tribute to a place in Melbourne where many people from different lands now call home. This is Postcards from Footscray. Fully the Opera on Joy 94.9, and that's all the time we have for today. Thanks very much for listening. Again, I wish you a very happy new year. Chúc mừng năm mới, and much happiness, success, and enjoyment in the new year. Please listen again next week. As Obama would say, same Fledermaus time, same Fledermaus channel.
Thanks for listening to the Joycast of The Fool and the Opera from Joy 94.9 Community Radio. You can find more Joycasts and the program blog at joy.org.au/The Fool and the Opera. The Fool and the Opera is produced by Dan Vo and Jed Gilbert, thanks to the support of Joy's sponsors and members. Please help support it by becoming a member at joy.org.au.